You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
On a football Thursday, and that's when we assemble the roundtable, which is brought to you by Rosewood Grill in Hudson and Strongsville. See what everyone's talking about at rosewoodgrill.com. I know if you're going to Rosewood Grill, you're talking about the killer French dip. It's a huge French roll stacked with shaved prime rib, melted cheese, dunk it in a cup of natural beef gravy, and it just melts in your mouth. Maybe even a little drip on your chin as well. It's good stuff. That place is awesome with gourmet burgers, flatbreads, thick steaks, the freshest seafood, sushi Rosewood's shots. Menu, sushi shots, you name it. Head on over to Rosewood Grill again in Hudson and Strongsville. We bring together Doug Deacon from the Cleveland Browns PNC Bank Radio Network. We bring in Tom Withers, who's with us from the Associated Press. Guys, looking at this, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and Doug, the schedule of this week is as much the story, I think, as preparing for this game against Cincinnati, because that turnaround for the Buffalo game on Thursday night comes bang, you know, right there. And I'm looking at this because that's also part of this three-game home stretch, as difficult a challenge at home as this team as crucial a portion of the schedule, I should say, for this team to define wherever it's going to go over these next 13 weeks is coming up right in front of us.
Well, yeah. Anytime you have a short week and you got a young football team and you got a new offense and a new defense, the preparation becomes pretty keen. And I think Ray Horton said today that they might have half of their defense in. So, you know, you got to implement so much, yet, you know, you got to cater it to who you're playing and the adjustments, and you know, we throw in the fact that the quarterback, you know, he's just started two NFL games in his career, so it is tough on a team. The advantage is you're playing at home.
Tom, let me ask you this. Is that people, you can follow Tom on Twitter at TWithersAP. Just noticed one of your notes that just popped up on my Twitter feed about Jabal Sheard not practicing, has a sprained knee, could be out a while. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and then also give your thoughts on, A, whether or not he has a chance to be back on the quick turnaround against Buffalo, and B, how you expect Barkevious Mingo to perform and what the differences will be if they don't have Jabal Sheard?
Well, we don't know officially yet how long Jabal is going to be out, but from what I understand, it's a sprained knee and he could miss several games. It's going to once again, you know, test the depth, and we're going to see whether Barkevious Mingo can handle an even heavier workload than he had last week. I think he had upwards of 50-some snaps last week, and there were times where, you know, you saw what maybe you worried about a little bit, where him being, you know, kind of overrun physically. You know, he's a lot more than a pass rusher. I think we've seen that already in three games, but I think there is some concerns there, and I think, you know, missing Billy Winn is also, you know, potentially another big blow for this defense this week. You know, this is once again going to test the depth of that front seven.
Yeah, I think this changes the dynamic of the front seven if Jabal Sheard is not in there. I don't know that he's gotten enough credit for how well he's
terrific,
played.
He's
made a lot happen for others around him as much as the reverse. And I think taking him out of there, Doug, worries me, because as much as Barkevious Mingo has been really sharp and spectacular in two games, two sacks, and all over the place showing that speed, I don't think he's Jabal when it comes to the stoutness that Jabal brings and can handle. Jabal is also a guy that's helping that run defense so much.
Yeah, Jabal has made a nice transition, and yeah, Barkevious is, you know, learning as he goes. I know there was one time he took on the lead blocker, Zach Line, last week, and he got, you know, smoked pretty good. But the thing about Jabal, I mean, about Mingo, is he got up, and you know, a couple plays later, he's making a sack. So, you know, it's a learning process, and I think, you know, Ray Horton addressed that today. You know, there's things we're doing well, and there's things that we need to get better at. And obviously, the one thing that the whole defense needs to get better at is third downs.
Got to get off the field, and part of that starts with the number two cornerback, Buster Screen. Chris Owens playing better than they have. Joe Hayden playing really as well as any cornerback in the league. I just went through, of all the corners who've been targeted 20 times, he has the lowest yards allowed, the lowest number of catches allowed, and the lowest yards per cover snap. So he's playing great. On the other side, though, Buster's been struggling a little bit. Owens has been struggling a little bit. Buster got it going a little bit at the end of that game, though. A couple of key breakups against Greg Jennings. When you look at this matchup, if Hayden can do, you know, contain A.J. Green, you're not going to take him out of the game like you can with Mike Wallace, but if he can do a solid job, you know, a lot of this game in the passing attack is going to come down to the tight ends against our safeties and linebackers, and then Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu against Screen and Chris Owens. How do you feel about those matchups?
Well, you know, contain is the key word there. I mean, A.J. Green came in here last year and had 7 catches for 135 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yes,
and
he did.
I think people thought he was contained that day. That is going to be – that's to me, that's the key to the game, is how that contest fares between those guys. And then, well, you know, you just hope for your best on the other side. But they also have two real nice tight ends in Gresham and Eifert, who are going to be a handful for anybody. So, once again, I think it's going to be up to this, you know, front seven to put pressure on the quarterback and hope that the secondary can hold its own.
And I wonder about the holding its own against Gresham and Eifert, Doug. The safeties on this team have not really been consistently strong in any way. I think they've had moments, and I want to give Tashawn Gibson props for the tipped pass that led to the TJ interception last week at Minnesota. But overall, there have been a lot of challenges, especially on third down. How do you see those safeties holding up against those tight ends?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing you can do is you can also, you know, walk off if they're going to put the tight ends off the line. You know, walk off a linebacker and try to give them some traffic before they get into the release and slow them down. So I think that is, you know, one way you attack it. The other way, we're just going to have to find out how well they do handle, because it's a first kind of for us in regards to Cincinnati, you know, drafting the second tight end. You know, Grisham, he's caught like 50 balls each of the last 3 years. You know, Eifert, as you mentioned, he can play any of the positions, not just tight end. He could go out as a wide receiver, and he's a mismatch waiting to happen.
Those guys combined averaging over 80 yards receiving per game for the first 3 weeks of the season. And you know, the guy that really stands out to me when I look at this Bengals attack, Giovanni Bernard, averaging 5 yards per carry, 14 yards per catch, 3 touchdowns in 2 games, and last week finally played more snaps than Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. You know, when you make it, let's say
some weapons.
They've got some weapons. Yeah. And let's say, you know, you don't have Jabal Sheard, Mingo is out there. Bernard's a guy that can take advantage of one misstep and be gone. How much of a concern is Giovanni Bernard for this Cleveland Browns team?
I'm sure Ray Horton has had his name up on the bulletin board all week. I think after watching Hard Knocks, I mean, that's a guy who really stands out. He really brings a new dimension to that Bengals offense. And, you know, they've been trying to give Andy Dalton some more weapons, and he certainly has more than he's ever had at his disposal.
This is the Roundtable. Doug Deacon from the Cleveland Browns PNC Bank Radio Network. Tom Withers, the Associated Press. It's brought to you by Rosewood Grill in Hudson, Strongsville. See what everyone's talking about at rosewoodgrill.com. All right, guys, let's talk about the quarterback. Doug, you brought it up, making only his third NFL start this week, his second with the Browns, coming off of that performance that was memorable for a lot of reasons, but far from perfect, Brian Hoyer. And now that we see him in game number two, and now that an opponent gets to see what he did in game number one for him, I just wonder what we're looking at tomorrow. Mike Zimmer, such a crafty, incredible defensive coordinator. And, you know, and I, looking and talking, we've all talked with Brian this week, I see a different guy than we saw last week when he found out he got the start. I just see a guy who's now, it's like, let's keep the nonsense of the hometown hero thing out of the conversation. Yeah, all the family's here. I'm not messing with tickets. That's up to them. I got to be focused and do my job.
Well, you know, the fact that he learned under Tom Brady, Brady has its benefits, and I think that's the way Tom Brady approaches the game. But, yeah, you know, they've got to look at him. They know what, you know, some of his limitations are, and they know how much he's seen as a quarterback. And I think, you know, you're going to find out that, you know, now you're playing a team with two good cornerbacks. Last week we got fortunate Cook went down early in the game.
Right.
So, you know, they were a little slim in the secondary, and we you know, had a good day. But, you know, you can't expect a guy in his third start to throw another 50-some passes. You'd like to have a little bit more balance. So with that said, you kind of would like to lean on McGahee a little bit. You know, Cincinnati's a team that can get after the quarterback. Last year they had 51 sacks, 42 of them by the defensive line, so they don't have to blitz a lot. And then, you know, they added the Mr. Congeniality Harrison to the equation. So, you know, they've got some people that can get after you.
Hey, to echo what Doug said, there were some Brady-like moments, I thought, for Hoyer on Sunday, you know, just in terms of his poise and composure and building that belief in the huddle. And then we saw some Brady-like moments from him on Wednesday when he spoke to the media, and I thought he was really quick to move on from last week and really kind of turn the focus towards not only today but this week and looking forward. And that's, if you ever watch Tom Brady in those news conferences, that's exactly what he does.
He learned well.
He did learn well up in New England, and hopefully he learned very well, because this is a Cincinnati team that's faced Jay Cutler, they faced Ben Roethlisberger, they faced Aaron Rodgers, and they're only giving up 6.5 yards per attempt passing. They have 4 interceptions, have only allowed 4 passing touchdowns. So this is a true tough test for Brian Hoyer this week. What do you guys need to see from Brian Hoyer this week? Whether the Browns win or lose, that would cement him in your mind as the starting quarterback for the rest of the season for the Browns?
Well, just having watched Cincinnati for a few years, you know, their key has always been the turnover. If they can win the turnover battle, you know, that's where they beat you. And I think, you know, he's got to do a better job of maintenance with the football. You can't have the 3 interceptions. Yeah, although one, his arm was tipped, but the other two, you know, you just can't have that. So I think he's got to clean up that aspect, you know, of the game.
Yeah, and the Bengals lost a turnover battle last week and won anyway against the Packers. So, you know, I'd like to see Hoyer maybe get off to the same start that he did last week, which I thought it was really big for him to get the ball into Josh Gordon's hands early and often. It's almost having, like in basketball, a big guy down in the post who you want to feed the ball to right away, get him some touches. I think that's going to be important as well. And then, you know, you got to hope that maybe the Bengals will walk towards the line a little bit and you can hit something over the top at some point. But I think, to Doug's point, I think he's really got to clean it up and keep those turnovers to a minimum.
And this is one of those games I think you really wish you had a Deion Lewis, because if they got a weakness in that defense, it's their linebackers. They're not good at coverage. So if you had that guy, that would be great. The other mismatch, I mean, might be Jordan Cameron, because, you know, other than Reggie Nelson, their safeties, you know, it's kind of a hodgepodge.
No, that's such a great point. I can see actually more of McGahee, the receiver, and he can handle that, and Chris Obanaya, the receiver, in a game like this. And I was thinking the same thing because of that linebacker matchup. Back to Hoyer, the other thing I see about him that might have, to your point, Nathan, about, you know, what can he do, or where is this going with the possibility of him securing the job for the rest of the year? I think the coaches just feel that there's more they can do. There's more. I just think that game plan and that play calling was reflective of saying, we've got someone who can process this stuff well and quickly and correctly most of the time. Let's lay it on him. They weren't hesitant. They didn't hold back on what they put on his plate.
Right.
And I'm not. I can't say unequivocally that they held back with Brandon Whedon. I just felt, though, that there was a sort of a much, I know there was a different operation, and the speed with which he did things helped make the line better, helped make the receivers get some better separation, but I also think it had something to do with the coaches and what they allowed him to do.
I totally agree. I think, you know, this is not a knock on Brandon Whedon, but it just seems like Brian has a feel for the game out there that maybe comes with experience or comes with sitting in a meeting room with Tom Brady for all those years and getting some chances. But I agree with you. I think the game plan was perfectly catered to what he can do. You know, we all talked about the protection issues on the line for the first 2 weeks, and I think Doug can speak better to this and how much better that offensive line played last week. But I thought Brian did a nice job of, you know, moving when he needed to and making the plays when he had to.
Well, and you go to the practices they've had out here where, you know, you talk to some players and they'll say, well, you know, he's running the scout team, but he's calling out Mike and he's calling out protections and the coaches on the defense. No, you don't have to do that. But, you know, he's you know, he's a thinking man's football guy.
Right. No, that's such a great point.
Yeah, his mind, I think, has been his strongest asset, getting the ball out quickly. And just want to go back, you talked about exploiting the linebackers. Ray Malaga struggles in coverage, and I think that's something where the Browns are going to have to either get him, try to create formations to get him isolated on Cameron, or can get a back out of the backfield on him, because that is one of the biggest weaknesses, I think, in this defense. And we know Brian Hoyer likes to get it out quick, so you can have a pretty effective short area passing game that can lead to some good yak when you're targeting Malaga.
Well, it seems to me that Jordan Cameron is becoming a mismatch for just about everybody. I mean, we've talked about this, you know, for months now, and it really seems like he's grasping the idea of being maybe the biggest target in this offense.
So I got this tweet. I'm mentioning this for Nathan's sake. I got this text from a friend of mine who does work with concrete, and a few years back he put on a new back patio at my home, and he so we did the work, great, and he's a fantasy football junkie, and you know, and of course I told him, hey, I'm working with Nathan Zagura, the guru, and he was laughing. He says, all right, I'm going to get some really good advice at some point. Well, I don't hear from him. Finally, after Jordan Cameron's game, I get the, should I do everything I can to trade for him? I said, Absolutely. Nathan would second that in a heartbeat.
I've been going crazy about him all the time.
So he makes the deal. He texts me this morning. He goes, if this doesn't work out, I'm coming in and ripping out your patio. So hopefully your advice works
out.
Stay
healthy.
Well, at least we'll find out where Jimmy Hoffa is.
Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Tom Withers from the Associated Press. Guys, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. It's the Roundtable. It's brought to you by Rosewood Grill, Hudson, and Strongsville. See what everyone's talking about at rosewoodgrill.com. We're going to have a conversation coming up with Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com, the team's official website. We'll get a Bengals perspective from him. You're going to hear from Gerard Cherry. You're also going to hear from Devon Bess inside the locker room. Jameer Howerton will take you there on this Football Thursday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.